Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dave Liebrich, Commissioner of the Bureau of the Fiscal Service within the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Also joining us from IBM is Roxanne Ulrich. So, Dave, how has the consolidation of two distinct organizations marked by unique missions and different cultures transpired? What are some of the challenges you face, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
Going back a little bit to the timeline, I mentioned September of 2011, and when we first started looking at this effort, by February 2012, we announced the effort publicly in the budget. And by October of 2012, we had actually executed the consolidation. We had actually come together as a bureau. And I think one of the challenges, and I think we did some things very, very well, and that I think in retrospect as I look back, one of them was that we were very transparent about what we were doing. When we knew something, we said we knew it. When we didn't know something, we said we didn't know it. I personally went out and met with every employee and talked about the way the consolidation was going about and where we were headed as an organization. I think we did a very good job of focusing on what our new mission and vision was. We spent a lot of time around that. In fact, I have a card that I carry around with me, and every employee has, which talks about that mission and vision, and then has more narrative on the back of the card, which talks about why we're doing what we're doing. We got this idea from Sony, who in the 1950s had looked at their organization, and they sat down and they talked about what they wanted to be. And at that time, people may remember that Japan wasn't really known for producing high-quality products. And they sat down and they said, we want to transform the way the world looks at Japan and the way they looked at electronics. And they wrote a fairly mission statement around that. And I think it's fair to say that Sony had a very significant impact on how people viewed Japan and how they viewed electronics and the work that Sony does. And we sat down and we said, well, how do we want people to think about us in 3 to 5 years? And I think we did a pretty good job of in 10 years. And I think we did a pretty good job of going through that process. We also did we did 8 major reorganizations within the organization and sort of, you know, bringing the two units together. We got the organizational structure in place. We set up a special site called One Fiscal where employees could ask questions, and we would have frequently asked questions responded to. We had numerous communications. I do something called a What's Up, which I do every 2 or 3 weeks, in which I talk about things that are going on in the organization. That became increasingly important during the consolidation period. We had our public affairs office also set up a communication mechanism to sort of give folks an opportunity to see exactly what was going on, when and where. So I think in that sense, I feel, you know, we were pretty good at managing the change. Now, that's not to say that employees always were happy with what we did. That's one of the challenges of leadership is sometimes you're going to do things which aren't altogether popular. But it's really important to have a clear sense of where you're trying to head and strategically where you're trying to position the organization. I think that was sort of the first phase was actually, you know, consolidation itself. Second phase is integration, and you look at sustainability, and then ultimately you look at sort of optimization of your organization. Where we are right now is sort of that remaining that integration phase. How do we get all the policies and practices to align with one another? How do we bring the cultures together? How do we manage in multiple locations, something we perhaps have not done previously? And so we have a lot of work still to do in that area. And I would say we probably have not done, my own view is, we need to get back to that very strong communication mechanism of giving people very clear insights into when something's happening and why. I think many of us, we felt as though we were on a sprint for the last year. And now it's time to sort of step back and say, how do we really make sure that these two organizations come together? We have an effort underway right now is to reexamine our values. And we sent a survey out to all of our employees, and we are doing focus groups, and we'll sit down and sort of see what are the right values that we want to have for this new organization going forward. How do we invest in our people? You know, my own view is one of the most important things that we can do in terms of the integration phase of this is making sure people feel valued. And as I mentioned about the card, one of the comments we have on there is we want to be an organization that's recognized as having experts in our field. Well, in order to do that, you have to invest in training. You have to make sure then, so we have a credentialing program that we have underway to look at what credentials do we think are necessary for us to be seen as the real experts in payments and collections and accounting. We even have a certification program now for call center personnel so that they get certified as certified call center personnel, CPA training, and government financial managers. So we're project managers, another very important one. We have over 130 project managers in the organization. certified project managers. So it's that sort of, you know, guaranteeing each employee 40 hours of training. And we can do that because the consolidation in some ways has given us more flexibility as we've gotten smaller and our budget's gotten smaller. We've given us a little bit more flexibility through the consolidation to be able to fulfill those commitments to our workers and say, we really do want to make sure you have the skills to do your job well. And this becomes increasingly important, as I mentioned earlier, about the demographics, where so much of the workforce is about ready to retire. I think OPM issued a report recently, said, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, 30% of the federal workforce will be eligible for retirement. That baby boom generation is going through. And I think for us, one of the things we look at is we say, you know, you can't stop hiring. I mean, you've got to bring new people within the organization. You've got to make sure that when you bring them in, you give them the skills and the resources and the training to be successful at their jobs. So I think that's one of the things as we're looking forward in the next year of the kinds of things that need to happen to appreciate the full merits of the consolidation of the two bureaus.
Dave, while budgetary pressure may have been a primary reason for consolidating, and you talked much about that earlier, there will no doubt be increasing challenges in the future to find cost savings and efficiencies in how you administer your programs and carry out your missions. To that end, would you briefly outline your strategic vision for the Bureau and your key strategic priorities over the next few years?
We talk about lead, transform, and deliver when we think about the things that we're doing. And I would say that we don't anticipate that the budget pressures are going to get any less in the coming years. So we now are, you know, looking out and sort of what are the next kinds of things that we need to be looking at in order to be sustainable longer term. And in that environment, you know, I think we've also kind of positioned the Bureau in a very good place because other government agencies are experiencing the exact same thing. In fact, one of the reasons why I think we've been successful in some of our initiatives is the other government agencies are feeling the exact same pressures that we did. And what you're seeing is them having the pressures to focus on mission. Mm-hmm. And how do you sustain or how do you protect your core mission responsibilities? And quite often the back office operations are not part of that core mission. And so the pressure is within those agencies right now, or how do you deliver the sort of the infrastructure less expensively, the admin, the overhead. And that's what we do. So when I've gone out and spoken to CFOs and the community, there's a lot of receptivity to the kinds of things that we're talking about, of centralizing some of the services and looking at shared services as options for agencies. And we'll be doing much more of that in the coming months of really trying to emphasize that for other government agencies. I will say that, you know, for us, one of the reasons why we were able to function well in the budget environment is that we really looked hard at our data centers. We went from 5 data centers down to 2. We went from 4 payment centers to 2. We reduced our facilities footprint and reduced costs there. We moved some of our functions to shared services. And we moved to electronics and a lot of things. So I think that, you know, there are lessons there for other government agencies that there are opportunities to reduce your costs by looking at those things, but also, as I pointed out before, on a more macro level of looking at more centralized services is another way to really reduce those costs.
Dave, your Bureau is the primary disperser of payments to individuals and businesses on behalf of the federal government, SSA and VBA benefits, federal income tax return payments. How are you modernizing the Bureau's payment operations and systems? What key initiatives are you pursuing in this area? And what are the intended benefits of these initiatives?
So the major one I mentioned earlier was the all-electronic on the payment side and continuing to move forward on that. In fact, I mentioned that we will have about 80 million checks that we'll produce this year. Interesting enough, about half of those are going to be tax refund checks, one-time payments. So in the past, the largest consumer of check payments was the Social Security beneficiaries. Yes. Well, in this past year, now the largest single consumer of check will be the Internal Revenue Service on tax refunds. So we want to try to make as much effort as we can to kind of get that number down. For example, if someone is already receiving a government payment electronically, why not receive your tax refund electronically? So, you know, we can try to do a little bit in that area. I think we also have an initiative underway called our post-payment initiative, and that's to really look at our how we analyze the payments and we account for the payments on the back end. In that process, kind of interestingly, we're finding that we have the potential to bring better data analytics to our payments processes. The example I'll give is that it can provide payment history in a much easier way than we have in the past. So, for example, if you're a Social Security beneficiary and you've been receiving a payment to your bank account for the last 10 years, and all of a sudden that's now been changed to become a payment to a prepaid debit card, you might flag that transaction and say, is there potentially fraud there, that someone has actually somehow tried to redirect that payment in a place it shouldn't be? At the same time, we'll have the ability to look at and say, if five payments are going to the same address, is that something that maybe we should pause and look at? If there are five payments from six different agencies, or six different agencies going to a same address, is that something? Now, there are some, oftentimes there's very legitimate reasons why that will happen. Multi-generational families will live in one place. There's representative payees who actually administer payments on behalf of others. So it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something that's not exactly right, but it may give you some indication of saying maybe we want to pay a little bit more attention to some of those transactions. And make sure that we're comfortable that they're being paid to the right people for the. So that's in the payments area. That's one of the ongoing areas. In the collections area, we have some work going on where we're looking at ways you can make it easier for individuals to pay the government. Right now most people can use online banking to pay certain entities like your utilities payments and the like. Well, why shouldn't you be able to pay the government that way and use the online banking service to do that? In addition, we're looking at payment mechanisms at national parks, and can you use a prepaid card or can you use an e-wallet type transaction, in much in the same way that you might be able to do that in your private life. So making it easier to interact with the government in the same way that people interact with themselves or with other private entities in their personal lives.
I was wondering, as a follow-up, the Bureau's payment information repository, how does it make government payments more transparent?
Well, it's an internal repository. So really what that is right now is, and it gets it back a little bit at my point earlier about the ability to do better data analytics with the information that's coming in. But right now what it's designed to serve as to make sure you have one repository of information so that when people want to know, when we all want to know internally or the agencies about what payments have been made and the information surrounding those payments, we have a centralized source for that. But ultimately, it will lead us or allow us to do better analytics around some of the payment data. Like I mentioned before, are there unusual trends in the payments? Are there things that we maybe want to be paying attention to?
Dave, your bureau administers the world's largest government funds collection systems through a network of more than 10,000 fiscal institutions. To improve your revenue collection services, the Bureau seems to continue to advance the Collections and Cash Management Modernization Initiative. Would you tell us more about that initiative and how it will lead to cost savings, eliminate duplicate functions, and simplify systems? And are there any other initiatives being pursued in that area?
So fortunately, we had a major initiative that concluded a little over a year ago on the cash and collections modernization effort that did actually rationalize our collections processes and will, as a result, save around $60 million a year by doing that. And that was that we felt very good about that. We brought that on budget, on time, and concluded that phase of sort of our collections. Part of that also in the collections area in the past 2 years, we've moved 1.4 million taxpayers from making paper payments to electronic payments through our EFTPS, our electronic tax payment system. Businesses are the largest payer of taxes, and so most of our collections come through the business payroll taxes and the like. Mm-hmm. Individuals sometimes have to pay quarterly taxes, estimated taxes, and many times, some of us will remember, you have to clip a coupon or you cut a coupon and you send it in. Well, we'd like more individuals to be doing that electronically, and you can do that through the EFTPS system, so it's a little bit easier to manage, and you can pre-position payments that says, I want that payment to go on January 15th. In advance, and you can set the amount along the way. So making that more accessible to private individuals rather than simply just companies. But as I mentioned, we had 1.4 million small businesses move to that in the last 2 years, significantly removing paper from the system in a significant way. I also mentioned the sort of the next generation of looking at how can we make collections more easy for government agencies and for individuals, and things like the electronic wallet, things like online banking. I think our efforts that will further modernize our collections processes.
How does the Bureau of the Fiscal Service transform the way the federal government manages its finances? We will ask Dave Liebrich, Commissioner of the Bureau of the Fiscal Service, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.